And the board itself meets twice a year?
Twice a year.
For how long?
Well, the board meetings themselves are one day, and then in the fall, that's coupled with a one-day S&S meeting, and in the spring, it's coupled with a finance committee meeting, which is about a half a day. Mm-hmm. And this is a pretty dramatic change. When I came, I think the board meetings were 3 days long. And
doing a lot.
That's what some of them said, actually. They got no information about the board meeting prior to showing up. And they walked in and they would have a stack of paper about this high, and then they would start at the top and start going through it. And they would argue about things, and then they would want to go back and change their mind, and can we vote on this? And they would, and it was just went on and on. So our board meetings now take about 6 hours, and they're well informed during the year, and they have a lot of information before the meeting. And after his second meeting, after I was director, at the end of the meeting, John Brownman got up and he said, "Well," he says, "you guys can all pack your bags and go home. I figure about 3 more years and Carl won't need you anymore." So John was always supportive.
What in that 6 hours twice a year, what is it that the board is, what are the key things that it does?
We have several committees, again, that report on the results of the selection and scheduling, on our finances. I give a report that usually takes about an hour and a half on our operations. We have new business and old business, like when we'll discuss the Chemical Heritage Foundation and things. I can give you one of our board books and you can look and see what they discuss. Is probably the best way to summarize that. But it's a pretty garden variety, you know, what is the business of the organization for the last 6 months. And I don't know whether it's good or bad, but we don't do anything on an incremental basis that's radically different. You know, we don't, by and large, have huge new ventures that we're going to, like we discussed building this building over about 3 years, but, you know, mm-hmm. at each session it was usually in they had agreed to that. Well, this is the next increment of information if we're going to continue down that road. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, the going to California and then going abroad weren't exactly incremental.
Well, the California move was, I think, in 1962. Mm-hmm. And again, that was at the invitation of a California constituency. I think in particular the electric chemistry mafia at Caltech. And some of the people that were instrumental in that are still going to the electric chemistry conference in California. And they kind of insisted on it, you know, and they pushed the board. And the international business got started in 1991. Alex was not at all keen on that, and that was a board initiative. And Bob Priscilli and Jim Florini and Lila Diamond and some connections at Torre Bergabini at the University of Pisa that Florini knew. And they really kind of ginned it up, and I think Biology of Aging may have been the first conference that went over there, and they just kind of went and did it. Mm-hmm. And when there were two boards. One board faction thought it was going to be the death of the Gordon conferences, Again, they had no financial reserves. They thought they were going to go over there and run up some huge bills, bankrupt the organization, and go out of business. And I think it was about a 6-6 split.
Yeah. Right now, that's only 10 years, and right now there are how many overseas conferences and how many locations?
This year, I think we ran about 25 in two locations, Oxford and Italy. And we must have about 60 conferences in our total inventory that are on a rotation. We don't run...
Rotation between U.S. and...
Yeah, we don't run overseas conferences per se. Virtually all of the meetings that we run are, they have to rotate on a U.S. elsewhere.
Are these typically new conferences that, or are they old conferences that say, gee, it'd be really kind of nice to...
Yeah. Well, the trick is really, if you look at a conference and it has greater than about a 35% non-U.S. enrollment, then you can begin to look for a request, because most of them are from Europe and they say, why do we always have to travel? You know, why don't you come to Europe next time? And then the enrollment will usually flip. And it'll go to maybe 40% U.S., 60% European.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them come about that way. Many of our new conference proposals that are coming in now, though, are coming in with the specific caveat that they expect to do an international rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them ask to have their first meeting offshore, although I'm a little reluctant to do that because their eyes are often bigger than their reality. It's nice to make sure it's going to work here before we send it off to the rest of the world.
When you first came on in 1993 and really made a push to attend basically every conference that year, did you notice a difference between the New Hampshire ones, the European ones, the California ones?
Well, I think a hallmark of the business is it should look like a Gordon conference no matter where it is. And that is one of my struggles, is to, as these people go off to different places in the world, they want to do something else. And I try to emphasize to them that, you know, we have a brand image. And I want somebody to be able to show up anywhere in the world, and the timing is going to be more or less the same. The quality of the site is going to be, you know, more or less the same, and they should feel like they're at a Gordon conference. And if that can't be achieved, then I will look for someplace else. And one of my charges was clearly to make the international business work when I was hired. That's one thing the board was quite clear about, that they wanted that set up and run as an integral part of the Gordon conferences.
What was the motivation for that? Simply science as a global enterprise?
I think that summarizes it pretty much entirely.
Right.
Yeah. And that U.S. scientists should have the opportunity of having a global exposure to what's happening in their field.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is nothing else like this in the world. And it's astonishing that the European Science Foundation tries, but they have a totally different business.
You are like Ray Kroc in that sense.
Well, but I mean, you're not a National Science Foundation. You're not an NSF. You know, when you mentioned the
European Science Foundation is a private organization, though.
Oh, okay.
And and their clientele, their customers, want them to run it like a Gordon conference. And I have met with very senior people in Europe who said, is there any way we can form a cabal with you that we can make these people do it?
Mm-hmm.
And they have something like the council, you know, and this had done studies, and they've issued reports that have essentially said, why can't you be like the Gordon conference? Said, because we're not going to do it.
In that regard, if you come back to the States, you mentioned Keystone. I mean, the what is the competition to the Gordon brand and model?
Well, there are certainly people in similar businesses, but the Keystone runs a different business. It's economically on a totally different scale. It's top-down managed. It's focused on skiing. Actually, Alex went to Bethesda and sat with the people at FASEB and gave them all of our operating documents and said, this is how you run conferences. And he did not want to get in the business of running biological Gordon conferences. And he said, you people are, you know, you're the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology, whatever it is. And it says, if you want to run conferences, great, you know, go rent schools in Vermont. This is how you do it. I went down to see them in 1993, and they were still giving their conferences a $7,000 a year chairs fund, which was the same amount that Alex had told them to give them in 1981. And they hadn't had the initiative to change it. And but that's still run on much more of a top-down basis. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the same culture by a long shot. The Engineering Foundation was also a direct spin-off from this organization, but they adopted a methodology of putting the operations directly in the hands of the chair and an allied board member. So they very quickly wound up eating in Davos and Hawaii, and Peking, Beijing, you know, and their cost basis is four times what ours is. It's hugely expensive operation. And they're now trying to spin their business off. I got a letter from them last year, would I take it? And, so it's... you know, it's just like, you know, is McDonald's a competitor with Applebee's? Yeah. You know, well, they both serve food, but they have a different clientele. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The international conferences, the economics of those must be different from the U.S. conferences in some way.
Well. I charge $125 a person to run the business, my overhead, if you will. I charge $170 a person to fund the chairs fund. And then the balance of the conference fee is the actual residential cost at the site. And I run them all in the same way. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that if I also keep a detailed cost analysis of every site, so we can see what the actual differences of the operating costs are on site. But they kind of level out. Like in New Hampshire, we hire usually at least four full-time people to staff the conferences. At the hotels in California, because, you know, they have a desk and all this stuff, we usually will have two people on site rather than four. But I have to fly people out there from here. But so, you know, it all kind of washes out.
I was going to pose a few questions in the area of industry versus academic representation, because a lot of the people we've talked to so far have, are very excited about this issue, and the point is that there's been a bit of transition over time, dating back before your time at GRC. And I guess the question is, what's the current status? What does the board think about it? Yeah. Where is the organization headed?
Well, when the conferences were starting in the 30s, they were actually driven by industry. And part of the philosophy was that the major national research labs
which were places like DuPont, GE, Westinghouse, and whatnot, and places like the National Bureau of Standards, wanted to get together with academic scientists and teach them something about the values of doing basic research, get mm-hmm. them involved, develop mm-hmm. partnerships. That's undergone a complete inversion. I find it personally disappointing that major industry doesn't seem to see the need for really long-term fundamental basic research. But if they're getting it from universities, you know, at a reasonable price, and, you know, if that's the way the market, you know, is driving things, and if they're getting a product that suits them, then, you know, why swim upstream? And I think our participation reflects that.
Mm-hmm.
And our board talks constantly about this idea of are we not being, make sure we're not being hostile to industry, that we solicit their participation. And I can give you also a ranking of all of our conferences by industrial participation, because we keep track of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it ranges from 90% industry participation to zero.
Where'd you get 90%?
Medicinal chemistry, for instance, I think probably has at least 90%. And then
zero is is what?
Well, when you get, I'd say, of 165 a year that we run, probably 50 or 60 of the conferences have more than, say, 10% industry.
Only 50. Awesome.
Yes. Yeah. And then the other 100 or so meetings would have anywhere from 10% to zero self-declared. You know, these are.
Do you tabulate other categories besides government and industry?
Academics.
I'm sorry, besides academics and industry.
Academic,
well,
government.
And that is the.
And private foundation, I think we also get support. I think we ask for four mm-hmm. affiliations.
Was that being asked for before your time, that sort of tabulation?
These sorts of records have always been kept. We've revised those, and we just did a major revision on our evaluation form that we'll start using January 1st. And I've tried to keep continuity so that we don't completely lose or destroy something in that process. And again, since this is all self-declared, if you ask somebody from Los Alamos where they're from, they might check industry. They don't regard themselves as necessarily a government lab, or they work for the University of California, so they might check academic.
Yeah. So is there a problem in this territory or not?
I don't think it's a real problem. You know, as long as we make sure that people in the general community are aware of the product that we have to offer. And when I give three chairs training sessions a year, and when I talk to the chairs, I tell them that when the board evaluates their conference, one thing they look for is diversity, and they mean that in every possible sense of the word. So if you have no industry people at your meeting, and it's an area in which there is an active industry, that will be a negative point. But if you, you know, if you're in many areas of the biological sciences, there just isn't any direct industrial interest, or if you're, say, in physical organic chemistry or something, you know, there's nobody left in industry that's interested in carbocations.
So you run training sessions for the chairs. They come here?
No. No, I run one. It's usually the end of January at LAX. I run one usually the first week of March up here in Boston, and usually one in May, typically at London Heathrow.
Are they every new chair required to attend?
Well, we invite them all and we pay their way. I can't go out and kidnap them. And we will usually get, I'd say, about 140 people between the three sessions. And they're usually happy, frequently told that I came because I felt I had to. And I thought this was going to be the most god-awful bureaucratic thing I ever sat through in my life. It wasn't bad.
What, other than the, you must be diverse, what else do you teach them, tell them?
Well, we have a booklet that's entitled Advice to Chairs, which I would be happy to give you. And we have copies of the biographies from all of that. And basically, we go through the governance of the organization, you know, how it's maintained and governed. We go through the business operation. We go through the structure of how the meeting runs during the week, and we go through the division of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And I'm the innkeeper, you're the scientist. I don't screw around with your science, and I appreciate it if you don't screw around with my bed and breakfast. And, you know, and if we can do it that way, it's really easy. Mm-hmm. If you want to take on the responsibility of, you know, running the business side of it, then, you know, it gets to be more and more difficult.
If you have 170 conferences going this year, will someone from the staff here be at every conference or not?
Well, I have, to get around this issue of going to 150 meetings a year, we've attempted, I had a fellow in New Hampshire who had been a site manager for a number of years, who was pretty good. He's a faculty member at Holderness School. Well, he now tours New Hampshire. He meets with every New England chair every week, mm-hmm. and he has a set level of interview questions, and then he sends us a written report on each one of these interviews, so we get some direct feedback from the chairs. And usually either myself, Darlene, or Jerry will be in different parts of the world and at different times for functioning. Then we run focus groups, and we will pick up to 10 conferences a year. And we have, a set interview. We ask the chair to get anywhere from 3 to 6 people together who have had considerable GRC experience, mm-hmm. either past chairs in that conference. And Jerry has been doing most of those the past couple of years, and she gets about a 2-hour interview, and we ask, you know, questions like, how do you feel you're treated by the GRC organization? Where do you see GRC brand relative to the rest of the world? Who do you think our competitors are? What do we do worse? What do we do best? If you'd like a few of those, mm-hmm. if you'd like a lot of them, you're welcome to. They're pretty much the same. Doesn't make any difference whether we're interviewing a physics conference or a biotechnology conference.
Is that something you instituted for? Yeah. Can you talk a little, you mentioned the Keenan territory, can you say where that came from, what it is?
Well, Ruben Carbonell is the director of the, do you know the Keenan family at all? Do you know
no.
the Keenan?
I know the name.
Yeah, but they're quite a wealthy group and big foundation in North Carolina. And one of their operations is this Keenan Institute for Engineering, Science, and Technology at North Carolina State University. And Ruben Carbonell is actually a Cuban emigree who is a professor of chemical engineering at NCSU and director of that unit. His board told him to institute some science and technology meetings as part of his program. And they talked about it and decided that if they were going to do it, they would like to run meetings that were like Gordon conferences. And the next step was, well, if we're going to run meetings like Gordon conferences, why don't we talk to the Gordon conferences? So we had some discussions, and their first proposal was to run for them to co-brand with us for specific meetings that they chose to support. And my board said, no, absolutely not. We're not going to corrupt the Gordon Conference brand. And Harry was very involved. Harry Gray was very involved. He was crazy. No, we will not do that. So we had some further discussions, and then we came up with this idea of these Gordon Keene summer schools, which they were very keen on. This is oriented towards young people, developing technology. And they are also supporting something else that we do that we call graduate research seminars, which really came out of Metals and Biology Gordon Conference, which is one of the heavily oversubscribed ones. And they don't admit any graduate students,
mm-hmm.
which is a very negative idea. So I started a 2.5-day trailer for the Metals and Biology Gordon Conference that is organized by and run by graduate students. And we call this a graduate research seminar. They come in on Thursday, spend Thursday evening with the Gordon Conference, then on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday run their own meeting, and usually 12 or 15 senior people from the Metals and Biology Conference stay over and act as mentors and discussion leaders.
So and typically there's what, how many graduate students come?
80 to 100.
From all around the country?
All over the world.
By, is it competitive, or do you in fact get 80 to 100? Applicants.
It has never been oversubscribed.
And that's just in the Metals and Biology.
And nobody else has picked it up. I really thought that this might, mm-hmm. because there are other meetings who could benefit from it, I think. Mm-hmm. But
did you just say that only Metals and Biology wouldn't have graduate students, or is that generic?
Well, when the meetings become heavily oversubscribed, then they have the choice, if you will. You know, I've got a full professor at MIT that's applied, and I have a third year graduate student from MIT that's applied. Now, which one do I admit?
I was going to say, Alex Cruikshank had the approach that people should come here for an exchange, not as students. So really kind of discouraged grad students participation. Have you been a little more flexible and said to chairs, you know, as room is available and, you know, smart people are applying, let them in?
Well, it's, I'd say, very much the opinion of my board that a conference that does not have graduate students in it is making a mistake.
Okay.
And that it should, you know, both from a networking and a professional development point of view for the students,
mm-hmm.
and from an experiential point of view of the more senior people, that they, that, and again, diversity is the word that that they really beat on. And male, female, minority, majority, junior, senior, industry, academic, government lab, you know, any aspect of diversity you can think of, pretty much, and I agree with him personally. I mean, I have no argument with him at all. And I've, you know, had dinner with many graduate students and postdocs that are just beaming, you know. That time I met so and so, I never thought I would meet that person.
Those graduate research seminars have run how long now? How many times?
I probably started that about 95, something like that.
And these Gornon Keenan summer schools?
They're about three. We just had the second chemical physics one this summer, so that would be 3 years ago that the first one met. Probably 4 years ago we started the plan for them. And our response to that has been a little disappointing. I mean, I really thought more people would step up and say they might be interested.